The new documentary, Only the Strong Survive, profiles singers who helped define the soul sound of the 60s and 70s, including several Stax artists like Wilson Pickett, Carla Thomas, and Isaac Hayes. The movie is named after a hit song by Jerry Butler, another singer profiled in the film. We're going to hear an interview I recorded with Butler in 2000. In 1957, Jerry Butler teamed up with Curtis Mayfield to form the vocal group The Impressions. The group's first hit was the 1958 record For Your Precious Love, featuring Butler singing lead. The following year, Butler left the group to start a solo career, going on to have such hits as He Will Break Your Heart, Moon River, Make It Easy on Yourself, Western Union Man, and Only the Strong Survive. Butler was born in rural Mississippi in 1939. 3 years later, he moved with his family to Chicago, where he still lives. In fact, he's now in politics, serving his fifth term on the Cook County Board of Commissioners. Let's start with some music.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy, boy.
Oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, there's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life. So listen to me, get up off your knees, 'cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't go.
Jerry Butler, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Terry.
Tell us the story behind this song.
Actually, this song and the lyrics were actual conversation that I had with my mother when I was about 16 years old. I was in love with an older woman, if you can believe that. And naturally, she said, this is a kid. I've got to move on with my life and do some other things. And so she just kind of dropped me like a hot potato. So I went, told Mama, hey, look, this is the end of the world. She said, boy, let me tell you this. That you have not seen half of the beautiful, lovely women in this world, and for you to be going through these kinds of changes this early in your life is absolutely ridiculous. Get out of here, you'll get over it. And Only the Strong Survive was really created out of that conversation. Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff were the co-writers on it, but the introduction that was recited was really from that conversation with my mother.
Now, you first sang gospel music. You were part of a group called the Northern Jubilee Singers, and Curtis Mayfield was in that group, too. And, of course, you also sang together in The Impressions. How did you first meet?
Curtis's grandmother, the Reverend Annabel Mayfield, was the pastor of this little congregation called the Traveling Soul Spiritualist Church. And Curtis's older cousins had this little group called the Northern Jubilee Singers. I wound up at this church one afternoon with a friend of mine, a fellow by the name of Terry Williams, because we just had singing in common and loved to do it. And he said, I want you to meet these people and get to know them, and maybe you'll decide to get involved with the group. In fact, I did. We used to kick Curtis to the side because he was probably 9 years old. He was the little guy. You know, I was 13. I was an old man. And so we kind of kept shoving him to the back until he learned how to play the guitar. And then he kind of just took over because he was the real musician out of the group.
Had your voice changed yet?
As a matter of fact, it had. My voice went into the baritone register when I was about 13, and it has never come up again.
What about Curtis Mayfield's? His couldn't have. He was only 9. How did he sound?
Well, you know, Curtis was just the opposite. Curtis always kind of sounded like a little girl, you know. You got to keep on pushing. Can't stop now. Move up a little higher. So he always had that kind of thing going. And I think over time, he effectively, as Smokey has done, used it to the point that it became really kind of his natural sound.
Now, did you and Curtis Mayfield leave gospel music for rhythm and blues at about the same time?
You know, see, we were never big and famous, as was Sam Cooke or Lou Rawls with the Pilgrim Travelers and Sam Cooke with the Soul Stirrers. We were basically a local group of kids attached to this one particular church. And even though on occasion we might wind up in the company of those great stars, we were never really known outside of the city of Chicago. And so when we started singing rhythm and blues, nobody was really affected by it, but maybe the people who belonged to the church and us. When Sam left, that was an uproar throughout the whole country in most of the churches, because here was this gospel icon that had gone from singing the sacred music to singing the secular music. And so there was a lot of, gnashing of teeth and carrying on about that. But Curtis and I, we really made and I would like to say we made an extension rather than a transition. Because even in Curtis's music, throughout the civil rights movement or what have you, you can still hear the strains of the gospel. And he really wrote kind of inspirational songs as opposed to what I call Hope to Die Love songs, which are the kind of things that I was writing.
What's an example of a Hope to Die Love song?
Your precious love means more to me than any love could ever be. Whereas he was writing, Gotta Keep On Pushing. Can't stop now. Move up a little higher, you see?
Yeah, yeah.
A difference in attitude.
Well, I think it's time to hear your first hit. For Your Precious Love, which was recorded in 1958 when you were with the Impressions.
Yes.
And you say that this was, that the lyric was originally a poem that you wrote when you were in high school?
Yes, a poem called They Say, as a matter of fact, as you will hear it in the lyric.
Was it changed at all for the lyric, or is it exactly the same?
The only thing that was changed is the title, For Your Precious Love.
Okay, this is 1958, Jerry Butler and the Impressions. Now, you recorded For Your Precious Love in your first recording session for VJ, and you also recorded that day Sweet Was the Wine, which was supposed to be the A-side.
Actually, we thought, when I say we, I thought, and most of the people who were in the room when For Your Precious Love was recorded felt that For Your Precious Love was a hit. But because it was such a ballad and so slow, and so spiritual in feeling, the record company wanted to go with the other side, which was more up-tempo and danceable and supposedly more what teenagers were all about. But For Your Precious Love won out, and it was just one of those songs that teenagers as well as older people enjoyed, and it became the A-side.
Were there any squabbles about who would get to sing lead on your first recordings?
You know, it kind of came with the song. For instance, if Curtis wrote the song, Curtis sang the lead. If I wrote the song, I sang the lead. There was a squabble after For Your Precious Love was released because Vivian Carter, who owned VJ Records and was the V in VJ Records, I should say, was also a disc jockey in Gary, Indiana, and she decided, having had an experience with a group called the Spaniels, where she wanted to take the lead singer and give him a career of his own, but he was so interwoven with the fabric of the Spaniels that she was afraid she would destroy the whole thing, made a promise to herself that the next time someone came through that door that had a unique sound and had a unique voice in it, that she was going to build that unique voice along with the group, so that in later years, if there was a breakup or if she decided to move one of the parts toward another career, she could take one act and make two. The Impressions happened to be that act, and Jerry Butler happened to be that voice. And so when the recording was released, it was released as Jerry Butler and the Impressions, and the group never recovered from it. We argued and fought about the billing from that day until the day I left, which was about 7 months, 8 months later.
Did that have to do with your leaving?
Yes.
Explain more about that.
Well, here we were, five young guys, walked into a recording studio as the Impressions, walked out as Jerry Butler and the Impressions. The other four guys were wondering, well, what did Jerry do to get top billing? How did all of a sudden it start to look as though we're working for him as opposed to him being just part of the group? When we got to the Apollo Theater in New York, they have Jerry Butler in great big letters, the Impressions in small letters. By the time we get to Miami, Florida, there's just Jerry Butler on the marquee, no Impressions at all. And in each one of those places, the other guys refused to perform because their feelings were hurt. Their pride was hurt. They just never could understand it. And no matter how much I told them that I hadn't done anything, that this was a decision that had been made by the record company, they just never bought it.
My guest is Jerry Butler. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Jerry Butler. He's one of the soul singers profiled in the new documentary, Only the Strong Survive. Did you realize yourself at the time how talented a singer and songwriter Curtis Mayfield was?
No. You know, Curtis was, when we first started, writing fairy tales, you know, Minstrel and Queen, Gypsy Woman, those kinds of little songs. And they were cute, but they, to me, did not show any out-of-sight kind of talent. About 1963, two or three, somewhere in there, he started to write the songs that, to me, were really Curtis Mayfield. He had matured to the point where he was writing We're Winner, Keep On Pushing, Say It's All Right, I'm So Proud of You. And then in the late 60s, he starts to do movie scores, Superfly, mm-hmm. and Let's Do It Again, and Claudine. And that was when, you know, my head started spinning around, and I said, you know, this guy who I've treated as a younger brother most of his life, and as a kid brother, that is really a genius.
You wanted him to work as your backup guitarist when you went solo.
Yeah, actually, what happened was, when the group broke up, I got my share of whatever was left and started out on a solo career. I was performing in Washington, D.C., and my guitarist, who denies to this day that he did it, a fine guitarist by the name of Philip Upchurch, just quit. And he said, I'm leaving, I got a better gig, and I'm out of here. I was in a lurch. I didn't know what to do. I needed a musician to help me get through these performances. And so I called on my friend Curtis, and he responded. He said, you know, all I can play are the songs that I've written or the songs that we wrote together, and yeah, I'll do that. And so he flew out to Washington, and we started to work together. And out of that, we developed some songwriting skills between the two of us, and we started a publishing company called Curtom Music, which he later sold to Warner Brothers Music for a whole lot of money.
Now, you say in your memoir that when you were a, quote, lightweight celebrity, before you became very famous, that you still lived in the housing projects in Cabrini Green in Chicago.
Yes.
And you say you used to be able to ignore the pee in the elevators and the stairs, the wine bottles and junkies. You'd been surrounded by that kind of filth most of your life. But then it became too much to bear. What changed that made that filth too much to bear?
You know, you become oftentimes a product of your environment. Once you have something else to compare it to, then it's difficult. You know, it's like, how are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Perry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, suddenly we were moving around. We were being treated as celebrities. We were eating in restaurants. We were going and living in hotels where the rooms were spick and span and the beds were made up perfectly, and there was no smell of urine around. And suddenly we realized that it was within our reach to get out, to be part of a bigger and better world. And what I'm hoping that the book will do, and as I go around talking to a lot of young people who are still living in those kinds of conditions, that you can get out. You have to work. You have to compete, but you can get out.
Jerry Butler, recorded in 2000. He's one of the soul singers profiled in the new documentary, Only the Strong Survive.